Okay, if you'll take your Bibles and turn to 2 Kings chapter 21. 2 Kings chapter 21. It's unfortunate that sometimes people are in families where they have very poor examples. A young boy oftentimes certainly looks to his father or his grandfather to see what a man ought to be. Maybe they don't do that consciously, but in fact, that has an impact upon who they are. And when young men or young women don't conduct themselves as they ought, we may have a tendency to excuse them because of their sorry example at home, either a father or a mother or a grandfather or a grandmother. In our prayer with Bill, we talked about learning some things that can help us. And I hope that as we study tonight, it will reaffirm, I think, what we know. That while it's a great blessing to have a father or grandfather that sets the pattern of morality and godliness, even when that is not the case, a young man can choose right, choose to serve God, or a young woman. So it happens that the young person in our study tonight is a young man. But as you've noticed, if you look through the lessons, we have lessons about young women who made such good choices as well. But hopefully it'll be beneficial as we look at this special young man, Josiah. So we'll start here in 2 Kings chapter 21. We'd encourage you to read 21 through 23 because there you get the whole story. And then 2 Chronicles 33, 1 through 35, 27. So we're going to take selected passages from that section that will be appropriate to our study tonight. So first of all, we start with Josiah's grandfather, and you see in chapter 21:1 who he was. His name was Manasseh. And then we ask you the question, what is said about him in verse 2 and in verse 9. I know that a number of you do the lessons, and I appreciate that. That's encouraging. I also know that you're hesitant to speak up in class, and that's okay. But I do appreciate the fact that you do the lessons. And anytime you're wondering which lesson it is, there is in the foyer, on the table, in your email, on the web, there's a sheet that tells you which lesson follows which lesson and what date it is, maybe. But anyway, that can tell you what lesson it is. So I'd encourage you, if you're wondering about that, to check that main sheet. It has both the Sunday and Wednesday lessons and tells you what they are. But we're looking here at Josiah, his grandfather Manasseh. So here in verse 2, you know, somebody may have a grandfather who is lax in duty, but pretty good moral guy and maybe believes in God and occasionally reads his Bible, that kind of thing. But that's not Manasseh. You'll see in verse 2, he did evil in the sight of the Lord according to the abominations of the nations whom the Lord dispossessed before the sons of Israel. You may remember when the children of Israel were going to be given the land of promise. The reason those other nations were losing their possession was because of their idolatry. They didn't know or serve God. And you would think that would be a lesson embedded in their history that they would learn from. And here, you see a failure that you read about in the book of Judges. That the fathers didn't train their children and talk to their children about it like they should, so that lesson was lost. Of course, we're a long way from that period of time. We're down in the 600s B.C. now. So that's been, 1,100 years ago? Or 900 years ago, I guess. And so that's been a long time ago. But Manasseh hasn't learned that lesson. And he did what those nations did that God showed his displeasure to by driving them out of their country. But there's more about that when you look down at verse 9. That would be bad enough. But verse 9 shows that he expanded his evil. He increased it. Verse 9 says, he seduced them to do evil more than the nations whom the Lord destroyed before the sons of Israel. So imagine a man who had a Jewish heritage, the opportunity to know the covenant, to have the institutions that God had put in place, put all of that aside, adopted idolatry in its worst form. And we'll see more of the particulars of that as we go through the study. We have some particulars right here beginning in verse 3. So let's look at, it says he did evil. He said he did evil. That's kind of generic, did evil. What kind of evil? So first of all, now it's interesting that while Manasseh was a sorry grandfather, he had a good father. And you read these stories of these kings, and sometimes good fathers had sorry sons, and that's the case here. And sometimes sorry fathers had good sons, and that's the case with Josiah. His dad was sorry, but he was a good young man. And again, it shows something we teach on, and that is the idea of free moral agency. That is, every person can choose. We've got young people in this audience. You've got parents who are serving God. But it's your responsibility to choose, and you will be judged for the choices you make. And there's no way you can blame mom and dad for it. And when you get to be 25 or 35 or 45, there's still no cause to blame mom and dad like some people do. But my family was, forget it. You can choose to do right. So here we have in verse 3, he rebuilt the high places. Remember, God did not want them to worship on the high places once they had a temple and a prescribed location. But not to have these high places of worship. And Hezekiah had torn those down. But Manasseh rebuilt those high places. But that's just the beginning. Read it again. He erected altars for Baal and made an Asherah. These are foreign gods. These are idols. As Ahab, king of Israel, had done. There's more. He worshipped all the host of heaven and served them. You may remember back in Deuteronomy, in chapter 18, in that discourse that Moses gave to the nation, he warned them against these very things. Don't worship the sun or the moon or any heavenly body. Obviously, it'd be like worshiping your clock. A clock works on a time frequency, and it's set by whoever made the clock. The heavens are like a clock, and they work on a time frequency. They're ordered by the laws of God. To worship the host of heaven is absolutely foolish. But that's what idolatry is. Men make an idol, build it out of wood, overlay it with gold, and then bow down to it as if it's going to save them. It's absolutely senseless. But that's idolatry. You read a lot about that in Isaiah. But then it says in verse 4, it gets worse. Imagine for a moment, when you got here tonight, if you'd have come in and sat down and there'd have been an image of Buddha sitting up here, how would you have felt? And then over here, some other god sitting over here on this table, how would you have felt about that? You know idolatry is out there, but when you get to church where you're going to worship the one true God, what if you saw idols there? Look at verse 4. He built altars in the house of God. In verse 5, he built altars for all the host of heaven in the two courts. It's even worse. You drive up in the parking lot. You start to come under the portico there. Oh, well, there's some idols right there, some altars to worship right there. You can just worship that idol as you walk in the building. So what kind of place is this? Remember, this young boy, Josiah, that's what he saw. That's what he witnessed as a boy. And then in verse 7, He set the carved image of Asherah that he had made in the house of the Lord. So here's an idol that he had carved, made out of wood. That's going to really do you a lot of good, isn't it? But he had put that in the temple. That's the kind of grandpa Josiah had. So if you ever think your grandpa is bad, go back and read about Manasseh. But there's more about this fella. If you look down in verse 6, you know, if Chad had this grandpa, he might say, Chad, come up here, man. I've got some guys who's going to take you somewhere and do something for you. Well, what are you going to do? We're going to burn you up. What? Yeah, it's worship. We're going to make you pass through this fire. What for? That's the worship of God. This was associated with the worship of the god Molech. And it says he made his sons pass through the fire. You say, what in the world? That's just senseless. It's stupid. Well, that's what idolatry is. But that's what they did. And he did it. And practiced witchcraft and used divination and dealt with mediums and spiritists. That goes back again to that Deuteronomy 18 passage where he said, don't appeal to those things. You want to know the will of God? God's plan was, I'm going to send you a prophet. And that was the work of Moses and the prophets that followed. That's how God makes his real will known to us. When we studied in the Bible survey, we talked about this very simple idea. When God wants to communicate with man, he does it through a prophet. When man wants to communicate with God, we do it through a priest. And Christ is our high priest now. And so you see this foolishness of appealing to, as if you could contact dead people and spirits and that kind of thing for wisdom and direction. Am I going to win this war? What should I do? Etc. But that's the foolishness of idolatry. We talked in our last Sunday morning class about why can't I go to that church? Why can't I be a member of that church? We talked about God, and there are churches here in Houston. For example, there are Hindu temples. And what they teach about God, God is the trees, or God is the river, God is the mountains, and that's God. Everything's God, and you're part of God. What kind of religion is that? Well, it's the religion some of your neighbors believe in and practice. And so here we're reading about something that's, 2,600 years ago. But people are just as foolish today when they follow this idolatrous way of thinking. All right, so in verse 16, something else is said about him, and it says, Manasseh shed very much innocent blood. I'm not certain what the writer of the Kings had in mind here. There's two possibilities, I know. One is what he referred to in verse 6. The innocent blood of young people and use them as sacrifices. Look at, hold your finger at 2 Kings and go to Psalm 106. And when we read passages like we're reading tonight and see the contrast to what we're doing here today, the rationality of the religion you profess, the grounds upon which it stands, we just spent a quarter seeing the evidences for the gospel of Jesus Christ. What it makes me thankful for is that by God's wonderful grace, I had parents who taught me the truth. I had teachers as I grew up who taught me the truth. Where would I be if I'd have been in those kind of surroundings where idolatry was taught and practiced? Here in Psalm 106, look at verse 37. They even sacrificed their sons and their daughters to the demons and shed innocent blood, the blood of their sons and their daughters whom they sacrificed to the idols of Canaan. And the land was polluted with the blood. Thus they became unclean in their practices and played the harlot in their deeds. And so it may be here in 21:16, it's a reference back to verse 6. And the young people, young boys and girls, innocent children, burned up in a fire, the practice of idolatry. But there's another possibility. Manasseh was a wicked, wicked man, and he did not like the prophets. The prophets would prophesy against him. And so these prophets, when you read, for example, Jeremiah, you see how the kings were against Jeremiah, how those in power were against Jeremiah, how they put him in prison, how they wanted to kill him. And you read throughout the Old Testament, time and time again, about prophets being killed. You remember Elijah having to flee for his life. And Jezebel said, I'll kill him if I find him. And so maybe, I don't know. The innocent blood is the blood of the prophets. We know that Jesus talked about this very thing. Look over at Matthew. Look over at Matthew chapter 23. Verse 30. Jesus is speaking to the Jewish leaders, religious leaders. And he said, these Jewish leaders said about themselves, if we had been living in the days of our fathers, we would have not been partnered with them in shedding the blood of the prophets. We know our fathers did that. If they were wrong, we wouldn't do that. Who did they hang on a cross? Jesus Christ. And so it could be, it's talking about Manasseh. Manasseh, living in the time of Manasseh, if you were a prophet, it'd be a dangerous time for you. But that's the kind of grandfather Josiah had. And I don't know, I'd like to know more about Josiah's teachers. I don't know who it was. And who maybe protected him from his father and grandfather who were so wicked, but somebody did. And by the grace of God, he was able to ascend the throne and to reign. So, this is the grandfather he had. So you got a good grandfather? You got one who taught you mom and dad, mom or dad, or at least lived somewhat of a moral life? You say, what am I going to thank God for? Thank God for that. But what about his father? All right, look at 2 Chronicles chapter 33 now. 2 Chronicles chapter 33. Amon was 22 years old when he became king. This is Josiah's daddy. What kind of man was he? Verse 22. He did evil in the sight of the Lord as Manasseh his father had done. As you read the stories of these Old Testament kings, you'll see that they walked in the ways of their father. Sometimes that's good. When you get down to verse 2 of chapter 34, you see that Josiah walked in the ways of his father David. Not immediate father, but ancestor. And here Amon walks in the ways of his father, Manasseh. And so young people can choose who to imitate. Who to walk in, who's going to be my example? And you may have terrible examples and good examples. And so he walked in the ways of his wicked father, Manasseh. And verse 23, he sacrificed all the carved images which his father Manasseh had made, and he served them. He did not humble himself before the Lord, as his father Manasseh had done. The story of Manasseh is an amazing story when you read the Chronicles. As wicked as this man was, as many people as he killed, innocent people, as shamefully as he treated the temple of God, when he sincerely repented and came to God, God was merciful to him. I'm going to tell you, I don't have a mind big enough to fully comprehend the grace of God. I just don't. But he was merciful to Manasseh when he repented. And what that tells you is it doesn't make any difference what mess people have made of their lives, how deep they've they've drugged themselves down or what they've done. God is willing to forgive when people come back to Him with a penitent heart. But Ammon was unwilling to be like his father in that regard and humble himself before the Lord. And he was put to death. You know, we talk about tumultuous times in our land. You read about these shootings like just happened up in Colorado, those kind of things. But what if you were reading this? Our president was murdered. I can still remember back in, was it 63? When President Kennedy was shot. I wasn't a Kennedy fan. But I remember my wife and I were recently married and it impacted us. What if you read about that again in 3 months? And again in 6 months? Again in a year or two? Oftentimes that's what they lived in. And as these kingdoms drew to an end, oftentimes these kings would reign just a short time. And we think we've got troublesome times. We don't have anything like what they had in certain periods of their history. So anyway, he was murdered in his own house, verse 24. And then you get to the end of chapter 33. The people of the land made Josiah, his son, king in his place. Okay, before I get to Josiah, anybody have anything they've written on their sheet or comments about the lesson thus far that you'd like to add for the class? Anyone?
I just took a note about when Manasseh repented that he did tear down the things and he ordered Judah to, in Jerusalem, to worship the Lord God. But he repented, he was forgiven, but they didn't listen.
That's right. That's a good observation. While Manasseh repented, he could not undo the influence that he had had. And so, we sow seeds that reap fruit. And sometimes we're not going to like the looks of the harvest. Be careful of the seeds we sow. It's a good point that Linda makes. Okay, so let's look at Josiah for a few minutes now. Our lesson is about young, this series of lessons on Wednesday night is about young men and young women. So we've got several dates that the scriptures provide for Josiah that are very, very interesting. And so the first one we have is in 2 Chronicles 34:1. It's hard to imagine, isn't it? I was talking to Aurora before class. She's 6 years old. I said, imagine Josiah was only 8 years old when he became king. 8 years old. Sure, that adds to the interest that I have as to who taught this young man, who educated him, who taught him to read. You'll see later he read. But 8 years old when he became king. And even then, verse 2, the writer says, he did right in the sight of the Lord and walked in the ways of his father David. You know, a lot of 8 years old don't know who even David is or how he lived. Here's a young boy, somehow knew about David, walking the ways of his father David, and did not turn aside to the right or to the left. And this is highly emphasized in the next verse, at a different stage of his life. And so we note this here in our question 3b. How old was he when the two things mentioned in 2 Chronicles 34:3 took place? And those two things are very interesting. The first one, it says, he began to seek the God of his father David. Well, evidently he was already walking in that way, but this is an intensifying evidently. And it's evident by what happened at this particular point in his life. But anyway, in the 8th year of his reign, he began to seek the God of his father David. And so at age 16, you had this intent desire to serve God. I don't know how old all the young people in this audience are, but oftentimes at age 16, you're thinking about sports or college or video games or having a good time or who you're going to date or what kind of car you're going to get. Here's a boy at 16 that has his mind on serving God. Have we studied about boys like that before? We did, didn't we? Four young men who made up their mind to serve God. Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So, you know, 16, you say, I'll think about that when I'm 26, 36. No, he's 16. And parents sometimes think, they're too young to ask that up. No, they're not. They're not too young to expect them to set themselves to serve God, think about serving God. So I don't know how old you are, young people. Got some on the back row, got some over here, got some up here. Think about that. Age 16. But there's a second thing, and in this one it says it's in the 12th year. So how old would he be? 20. 20 years old. He began to purge Judah and Jerusalem. What does that mean? Well, we have some particulars here of the high places. So let's suppose you're one of those people in the time of Manasseh that goes out to some place over here, a hill, and you build an altar. You go through all the trouble of gathering the stones or whatever you do to make this altar. And here comes this king. He doesn't just tell you don't go there. He goes over there and sends his army and just tears the thing down. How do you feel? He tore my altar down. Destroyed the place where I worship my God. How old is this boy? 20? That young whippersnapper. And then it says, the Asherim. So here's this guy who went through all this work to carve these female goddesses. He just destroys them. The carved images. The molten images. They tore down the altars of Baal in his presence and the incense altars that were high above them he chopped down. Also the Asherim, the carved images and the molten images he broke in pieces and ground to powder, scattered it on the graves of those who had sacrificed to him. Then he burned the bones of the priests on their altars and purged Judah and Jerusalem, these priests that had served at those sacrifices. And in the cities of Manasseh, Ephraim, Simeon, even as far as Naphtali, and in their surrounding ruins, he also tore down altars and beat the Asherim and carved images into powder and chopped down all the incense altars throughout the land of Egypt. You know, somebody might say, okay, you'd have to worship them, but put them up here as a memorial. He said, no, there's not going to be any memorial. They're gone. How old is he? 50? No, he's 20. 20. What a dedication to God and fearless. You reckon there are people got mad at him? You reckon there was some opposition? You're a 50-year-old priest who serves at these altars. There's this 20-year-old boy tearing down your religion. That's what he's doing. Then we have in chapter 34 and verse 8, the 18th year of his reign. Now how old is he? 26, right? 26. When he had purged the land of the house, he sent Shaphan the son of Azaliah and Messiah, an official of the city, and Joah the son of Jehoahaz, the recorder, to repair the house of the Lord his God. So here the temple was in a bad state. The temple in the Jewish religion was the representation of God's dwelling place among them. The book of Ezekiel, that really stressed how the glory of the Lord left the temple. God didn't really reside in the building, but it was a representation of the God that had brought them out of Egypt and protected them and provided for them. But it had been it's fallen into a state of ruin and desecration with all this idolatrous worship. And so he began this reparation of the temple. So in 2 Chronicles chapter 34, you read all through here about the repairs that were being done, but I want to focus on one particular aspect here, and I've got the verses here on your lesson. In verse 14, when they were bringing out the money which had been brought into the house of the Lord, Hilkiah the priest found the book of the law of the Lord given by Moses. And Hilkiah responded and said to Shaphan the scribe, I found the book of the law in the house of the Lord. What do you mean, found the book of the Lord? Imagine if somebody goes to your house and say, I'd like to read the Bible. Well, I think there's someone somewhere, maybe over in the closet somewhere. I'm not sure where one is. What if you had parents like that? What if you lived in a house like that? What if you went to church? There's no Bible. I don't even know where one is. But they find the book when they're repairing the temple. Look at verse 18. Moreover, Shaphan the scribe told the king, saying, Hilkiah the priest gave me a book. A book. So what? Ah, but this is the book. What do we call it? Bible. That's what Bible means. The book. Not just any book. And you'll see Josiah didn't look at it that way. And so then in verse 20, the king commanded Hilkiah, Hakam the son of Shaphan, Abdon the son of Micah, Shaphan the scribe, and Asaiah the king's servant, saying, Go inquire of the Lord for me and for those who are left in Israel and in Judah concerning the words of the book which has been found. For great is the wrath of the Lord which is poured out on us because our fathers have not observed. Listen, he had it read and he said, God is angry with us. Why? We have not observed the word of the Lord. How do you know? Because you feel it? No, listen. To do according to all that is written in the book. So we gather here on Sunday, we gather here on Wednesday, we have Bible verses, and we say, turn to this passage. Why? There it is. It's what's written in the book. That should form the pattern of our thinking and our worship. And that's Josiah's attitude. Go down to verse 20. Let's just keep reading. I started reading there, didn't I? So let's go down to verse 24. Behold, I'm bringing evil on this place and on its inhabitants, even all the curses written in the book, which they have read in the presence of the king of Judah, because they have forsaken me and have burned incense to other gods, etc. But the people, a lot of them hadn't read the book. Does that make a difference? To God? No. I gave you one. You didn't read it. Still, you're going to suffer the consequences. So it's your choice. It's your choice, young people. You can read magazines. You can look at your video games. You can watch TV. Or you can read the book. You can grow up ignorant of the book, but that doesn't mean you're not going to suffer the consequences of not reading the book. And that's what you have in this particular reading that we're looking at. All right, and then in 2 Chronicles 35:1, we ask you the question, what followed that? Just after the purging, first he purged Jerusalem, and then he had the temple repaired, and then he had this great Passover. Passover was, there was three annual feasts. This was the one at the very beginning of the year. It was so symbolic because it was a testimony to their deliverance from Egypt by the powerful hand of the Lord. You know, it'd be like going to a church. And you go one time, two times, five times, 6 months. You finally say, folks, when are y'all going to observe the Lord's Supper? I think my daddy did that when he was 10. What? The Lord's Supper. It's a memorial to the greatest event that's happened on this earth. The death of the Son of God for our sins and His glorious resurrection. Passover. One of the greatest events you'll read about in history. But here you see Josiah celebrated the Passover to the Lord in Jerusalem. The 14th of the first month. But there's more about this Passover. Look at verse 18. This is very interesting. I don't know how far to press this, but it's a very interesting statement. There had not been celebrated a Passover like it in Israel. Listen. Since the days of Samuel the prophet. Now, who does that encompass? David. What great man? Yeah, David.
David?
Solomon? What? My goodness. Even his own daddy, Hezekiah. Not that they hadn't celebrated, but like this. With this dedication to God's purpose and plan. With the emphasis and focus. It's a remarkable young man, isn't he? Of course, he was 75 by now, wasn't he? How old was he when he died? We have that on your lesson.
39.
A young man with a short life, but so full of powerful, righteous decisions and deeds. In let me see what verse I want here. When they came, oh, here it is. Chapter 34 and verse 30. So what did the king do? He gathered all the elders of Judah and Jerusalem. These are the leaders. The king went up to the house of the Lord and all the men of Judah, the inhabitants of Jerusalem, the priests, the Levites, and all the people, from the greatest to the least. And he read. Back in Deuteronomy, there's a statement made that the law was to be given to the priest and read every 7 years. Now, it was the priest who read. But I see no reason for departing from the literal statement that's made here. That he read. Imagine the king reading the law. He read. What kind of an assembly was this? It wasn't jumping and shouting and clapping hands. You paid attention and he read. This was a time of reform. When you read the book of Ezra, that's exactly what happened in the time of Ezra. He went to institute reforms. And you know what he did? He gathered the people and they read the law. And the men explained its meaning. Tremendous lessons here. More than just about a young man named Josiah. But young men get their lives off on the wrong track. Maybe because they don't read or they haven't had a daddy to read to them. Do daddies ever read to their boys and their girls the Bible? Do they just leave that to mama? Isn't a daddy the king of his castle? What do grandpas do? Do they ever read the Bible themselves? Do they ever read it to their children? That's mama's job. This is the king. This is the king reading. Not a Bible class teacher. Not a priest. It's the king. He's concerned about his nation. And that's what you see him doing on this occasion. Look at 2 Kings 23. I'm about out of time, but I want to briefly look at this with you. This is not in chronological order. He starts in verse 4 and goes through this list because he's talking about in this list about the comprehensive reforms that Josiah instituted over a period of time. But boy, you began to read this list. You began to get a feel for how bad the country was. It says in verse 4, brought out of the temple of the Lord all the vessels that were made for Baal and the Asherah and all the host of heaven, burned them outside Jerusalem in the fields of Kidron. Verse 5, he did away with the idolatrous priest. You get down to verse 6. He brought the Yeshua from the house of the Lord outside Jerusalem to the brook Kidron and burned it in the brook Kidron, ground it to dust, threw its dust on the graves of the common people. Listen to verse 7. You say, I know that homosexuality is wrong, but that's out there. What if you came to church and there were prominent people in the temple dedicated to providing homosexual acts? That's what you have. Read it. He broke down the houses of the male cult prostitutes. King James says sodomites. New King James says the perverted people. That were, listen, where were they? In the house of the Lord. Not down on Shady Corner Street. In the house of the Lord. Verse 10, he defiled Topheth, which is in the valley of the son of Hinnom. Here's where you get your Gehenna. That became a term for hell. Comes from the valley of Hinnom. This is the background history. It was a beautiful valley. But they practiced idolatry there. So he defiled Topheth, which is in the valley of the son of Hinnom, that no man may make his son or daughter pass through the fire for Molech. So they'd use that valley to build these fires for Molech, make these kids go through it. So he defiled it. Now this is the hypocrisy of people. They don't see anything wrong with putting their sons through the fire to Molech. But now he puts dead men's bones down there. Oh, we can't go down there. That's unclean. Isn't that foolish? But Josiah knew that's the way they thought, so he defiled the valley. Later, that valley was used to dump corpses off the cliff above it of criminals, people like that, and be dumped into that valley. Of course, they'd begin to corrupt and decay, and there'd be maggots and worms, so they kept a fire burning. That's where you get your term for hell. Where the fire is not quenched. And the worm does not die. Here's your background for it. Verse 11, he did away with the horses the king of Judah had given to the son at the entrance of the house of the Lord. That's what you got to see when you go to the house of the Lord. The altars were on the roof, verse 12. And in the altars in the two courts, verse 12. Verse 14, broke in pieces the sacred pillars and cut the Asherim down, and so forth. You just go on through it. It's just an amazingly corrupt time. You'd think there's nobody that's righteous in a time like this, but there's a young man that is. What's so sad about this story? He was a contemporary with Jeremiah. And you read about all these external reforms. Josiah was also a prophet. But when you read the book of Jeremiah, you see the hearts of the people weren't changed. Linda referred to that a while ago. You can change the externals, but that doesn't change people. It's the heart that's got to be changed. Well, let me finish with this one question. We've got a few young people here, but we've got a number of people who are older. We've got daddies and mamas and grandpas and grandmas. Here's the question for us. What kind of examples are we to our children and great-grandchildren? Thank you for your attention. Next Wednesday night, there's a sheet. Got the lessons on it? If you wonder, you can always look at that sheet. And next Wednesday night, we're going to talk about some young women who justified sexual impurity. Be a great lesson, a lot of good lessons in that story in the Bible. Those things are written for our admonition. And Sunday morning, if the Lord is willing and we meet here, on the sheet, they've got a sheet back there that's got the classes. Sunday morning, we're going to talk about Jesus Christ and how it affects what church you can go to. And the lessons are on the table in the back.